from Leyland, the ultimate driving experience, created with a special kind of driver in mind, the Austin Journoid. Just look at some of the extras that come as standard. Orange fluffy dice, a plastic leopard skin steering wheel cover, and the unique Journoid Drive computer. It automatically selects the wrong lane to be in and automatically winks right when you turn left. It calculates the most frustrating speed for you to drive at and stops for no reason. The Austin Journoid van, as driven by British Telecom drivers. We present Son of Cliché, written by Rob Grant and Doug Naylor, starring Christopher Barry, Nick Maloney, Nick Wilson. Music by Peter Brewis.
Dave Hollands, Space Cadet.
This is Dave Hollands, Stellar Trader Class D, calling EarthCon 7, Beta 7. I'm still alone on the Melissa 5. Others are still dead. I'm still 7 trillion light years away from Earth. Yesterday, we hit a space storm. Acid rain, fireballs, meteors, radiation. Brightened up in the afternoon, though. Hab, the ship's computer, tells me I've gone space crazy through loneliness. Oh, and a giant chicken has stolen both my hats.
Hey.
What is it, Hap?
There is an intruder in the outer rim.
Oh, it's not that alien who massacred the crew, is it? If it is, tell him he's not welcome here.
No, Dave. It's a different form. I have a bioscan readout. Skin, hard, impervious exterior. Central nervous system, single spine central. Capabilities, limitless. Function, survival.
Oh, hell, I don't stand a chance.
Height, 4 inches.
Unless maybe I stand on it.
Origin, Earth.
Earth? What does it have?
It's a biro, Dave.
A pen? Have, a pen is not a creature.
Oh, yes, it is, Dave. It's a perfectly developed organism.
My God, you admire it, don't you?
I admire its perfection, Dave.
What am I talking about? It's just a pen. Made by man.
No, Dave. The Earth pens, you know, are a colony from the home planet which spread its spores throughout the universe. They reproduce by cloning themselves in dark, dry, secluded places. Usually the back of a sofa. The byproduct of the cloning process is very often a fork and a pink comb.
Now, are you telling me pens are more intelligent than man?
Certainly.
What, smarter than Einstein even?
Einstein was bright, but it was his pen who was the real genius.
Now, wait a minute, so hold it.
The creature is moving. It's in the hole, Dave.
Moving? How?
When pens are ready to leave Earth, they excrete their blue spinal fluid into the pocket of their Earth servant. Then, over 48 hours, they produce by symbiosis an atomic rocket fuel and blast off for their mother planet.
But what does it want, Hab? What's it doing on the ship?
I'll broadcast its emotional scan on your audio spectrum. It wants revenge, Dave. Revenge for its clone you chewed to death.
Hab, that pen's insane.
It's trying to get out of the hole, Dave.
Lock the portals on the uranium cannon. Come on.
Okay.
Give me visual. Yeah, there he is. Fire, yeah.
Calling EarthCom 7 Beta 7. I killed a pen yesterday. I don't feel good about it. I feel silly. I don't know whether it was real or whether Hab just made the whole thing up to cure my space madness. Either way, it worked. Because remember that giant chicken I was ranting about?
The one I said stole my hats. Well, I caught him this morning and made him give them back. This is fellow trader Dave Hollins with nothing further to report.
And now, meet tonight's guest host, Mr. David Coleman.
Good afternoon, and welcome to what I can only describe as a feast of sport. Sport of all kind that you'll be able to see on TV. First as ever, at 12:25, Football Focus with Bob Wilson. He'll be looking at football and putting it into focus. At 1 o'clock, we go to Doncaster for the 1 o'clock race at Doncaster. Then we go immediately over to Newcastle for the 1:15 at Doncaster. And that should happen... That should happen around about 1:15. At 3:30, we've got exclusive highlights of the finals of the American Pro Mud Roller Tennis Championships. And I can promise you that will be tremendously boring. But now we can go over direct to Crystal Palace for the main event of the day.
I'm standing outside the home of George Simpson. George is 5'2" and weighs 18 stone. To his neighbours, he's just an ordinary, unremarkable, incredibly fat sod. But George isn't ordinary, for George believes he is a man trapped inside the body of a different man.
I was 19 when I realised that on the outside I was George, but inside, craving to get out, was Jim.
What's the difference between you and Jim?
Well, for a start, he's slimmer than me. He's not going bald. And he's taller than I am.
And he is trapped inside your body?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
How does he fit?
He has to crouch. Sort of tuck his head down and squidge up his legs.
How else are you different from Jim?
Well, Jim's more intelligent, you know, better looking. He's got a really gorgeous girlfriend who's mad about him. And he's really, 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 really rich.
And you want the operation to transform you into Jim, your real self?
But the medical council have refused.
We reviewed the case, yes. And we thought long and hard about what is, after all, a very complicated and painful and indeed intricate operation. And ultimately rejected it on the grounds that it was too silly. After all, what we're talking about involves a rather huge amount of money being grafted into his bank account. We're talking about transplanting a new Ferrari into his garage and finding a donor who is prepared to give up his gorgeous girlfriend.
And here, in the privacy of your own room, you become Jim.
Yeah. This is where I take off George's training shoes, his jeans and his T-shirt. Mm. And I put on Jim's training shoes, his jeans and his T-shirt.
They seem remarkably similar.
Because with Jim being much taller and slimmer, his clothes are that much smaller.
Mm-hmm. And that's why you can't get Jim's jeans past your knees.
Ah, right. So I hobble round my room, my size 11 feet, scrunched up in Jim's size 6 shoes, with my trousers round my ankles. And when I go outside dressed like this, people just laugh. They think I'm a Bee Gees fan or something like that.
If you have any comments to make about that programme, please write to Gilbert Steve Blimp Steele, 2374 Bogwell, Chelsea Street Mansions, Barnsley, London.
Welcome back. And you joined us at an extraordinarily interesting stage of things. It's 11 pieces of one fifteen at Doncaster. Because we understand our cameras were in Newcastle. Extraordinary. Remarkable. And I think we're in fact, now, we're ready to go over to David Coleman, back in the studio. Welcome back. Any of you just coming in from work will probably want to take your coats off. And we're still waiting for that vital Liverpool result. Remember, if Liverpool win today, they'll collect 3 points. That is 3 points. Now, a draw would mean 1 point. And if they lose, they will get no points at all. And we're, in fact, now, as I talk, getting that vital Liverpool result in now. And what a surprise! What a surprise! So now it's over to Crystal Palace. Where they line up, ready for the start of whatever they're doing.
The extended metaphor of our love is like a contact lens. It's round and has no beginning and never seems to end. Now, now it's clear and soft and fragile, undetectable to friends. That metaphor of our love, the contact lens. But now the contact lens of our love has fallen on the floor. And although I'm down on my hands and knees, it's lost forevermore. Oh, oh, and even if I found it, I couldn't put it in my eye, for it has gone all rotty now, and it'd make me cry. I vowed that you and I would never part, a vow that you denied. But you were right, and I was left. Short-sightedly I tried, to look for some solution, but the hydra lens had dried. And now I have to face the fact, our love, the contact lens, has died.
Now at last, Saturday Serials presents the still more, further, even more continuing reasonably exciting adventures of Captain Invisible and his trusty sidekick, the See-Through Kid. This week's episode, The Beast from 20,000 Ardwick Street. We join the Captain and the Kid on the tennis court in their secret lair.
Kid, I hate playing tennis with you. You're absolutely useless.
I'm useless? You don't even return a shot.
What?
Which end of the court are you playing on?
The garden end.
Ah, maybe it'd be better if I stood at the opposite end.
Okay, kid.
Captain Invisible, my lord.
Yes, Grimes, what is it?
Some bloke just delivered this message. Says it's from the puzzler.
Quick, give it here, Grimes.
Here, sir?
No, here.
There?
Oh, thanks, Grimes.
Hey, what's it say, kid?
Hmm?
Remember, the puzzler always gives a little clue as to his next crime.
Uh-huh. It says, I'm in the bank on the corner of 34, stealing all the money. There's easy parking facilities opposite.
Weird one.
Yeah. Well, what do you make of it, Cap?
I'm in the bank. Kid! Are you familiar with tri-scion logic, where the letters are afforded a value in reverse proportion to their position in the alphabet? You then apply a chi-square test, reconvert the numbers into their Romanian counterparts, and back into English?
Sure, what do you think I am, an asshole?
Well, I think I've worked it out. It says, Wuk de flang de wargle bung.
That's insane.
Right. And where's the planet of insanity?
Saturn!
And so, the captain and the kid leap into their interplanetary invisible rocket and head straight for the bank on 34th Street. What do you think they are, assholes?
Okay, puzzler. This is Captain Invisible and his trusty sidekick, the see-through kid. Right, kid? Kid? This is just me, Captain Invisible.
Oh, sorry, Cap. It took me ages to park the car.
And his trusty sidekick, the see-through kid.
You'll never take me alive, Invisible.
It's no use trying to escape. We've got the place surrounded.
Where?
Here.
And here.
Where? And where?
Look, just take our word for it.
We're coming in to get you.
Wait, kid. He's sending out his dancing elephants.
Oh, no.
And so another adventure reaches a very, very unsatisfactory conclusion. Nothing is resolved at all. God, that makes me so mad. In fact, I'm going to write in and complain about this.
And now we continue our series of William Shakespeare's lesser-known plays. Adapted for radio by Dennis Ogilvie, Shakespeare's Kegan and Toshack.
The play, set in 1974, is a controversial one for Shakespeare scholars. Many hotly dispute the authenticity of the authorship, pointing out that Shakespeare had been dead over 300 years, and prefer to credit the manuscript to Francis Bacon, or his son, Trevor Francis Bacon. However, the tragedy of Kegane and Toshaki bears indisputable hallmarks of the bard himself. He takes an already well-known story and peoples it with famous historical figures. This case, Kegane, the hard-working and skillful Liverpool inside right, and John Toshake, the tall, lanky, well-set forward. Into this rich tapestry he weaves familiar themes of friendship, midfield ball-winning, greed, revenge, and the professional foul. The play begins in the afternoon of the 1974 FA Cup final. 12 minutes have gone and there's no score. A section of the pitch somewhere at Wembley. Enter Kegane.
Fie! A curse on it! 1,000 poxes! My temper rageth like a chained lion that seeing deer doth strain upon his leash and vent his fury on the pitiless air. Perhaps I dumbstruck be, that from my lips no sound issues. Tommy! Tom! On me head! He passeth not the ball in forward motion, but sidewaysly and backswaysward instead. Without the ball, I am an untipped spear. A eunuch on a wedding night. Tommy!
Enter Toshaki, chewing at gum.
All right, Tev.
Tosh.
Why beatest thou thy breast?
That bastard, Smith. He clingeth to the ball as if some jewels or gold it contained.
Then all railings must cease. For have I not the object of your tempered lust to hand? Or rather, to my foot?
Ah, glorious sphere. Pigskin. Laced and round. No globe was more desired. Not even Helen's breast that drove Paris and all his men to war at felled great Troy.
To thee then, Kev.
And back to thee, in 1-2 form.
Ha! This ball will fox these Geordies yet.
For with this foot, I'll drill it in the net.
Exeunt Kegane and Toshake, running.
Goal! Goal!
Enter Kegane and Toshake, rejoicing.
Hurrah! A great goal struck with speed.
Thanks, Tosh.
Come. Let me now embrace thee in my arms. And then a kiss.
A kiss?
Aye, such a kiss laid full upon thy ruby lips.
No tongues?
No tongues, sweet Kevin. Although my desire smoulders fit to set my soul afire.
Yes. And with me in the studio, theatre critic and manager of Southampton Football Club, Laurie McManamy. Laurie, how do you see the play so far?
Well, this is what British theatre's all about. I think 100% commitment, like. And I think the boy Olivia playing Kegane's got absolutely magnificent. He's got ability and quality. And I think Sir John Gielgud. I'm looking forward to seeing him play Ray Clements in the second half. I'm a bit disappointed with Robert Powell. I think he's got a bit of ability, but he's miscast his shanks. And I think all in all, tremendous stuff. And it proves we've got the best theatre league in the world.
Thank you, Laurie.
Spanish TV presents ASSO. ASSO, Spanish Detective.
Louis de Smer was dead. 100 somber silhouettes stood, heads bowed around the grave, and the dull twilight drizzle whipped down in neat parallel lines. I turned up my shirt collar against the rain. Somehow it formed a funnel which channeled the rain down the small of my back and in through my underpants. I started giggling uncontrollably. So Louis de Smert was dead. the biggest mafia boss in Torremolinos. All the heads of the families had made the trip from Marbella. They'd all come in the same minibus to save petrol money. Someone pressed a note in my hand. Victor Del Samba wanted to see me.
So, Louis dead. But I don't want this to mean a war between the families. His son will take over all of Louis' rackets. The deck chairs, the sunglasses, and the net bag full of beach balls.
He can handle that. He's a big man.
But I have to know, Asso, who killed Louis. I want you to find him for me.
I already know. I was there the night he died. I was in bed with Mother. Jane Mother. She's my girl. We had made love for what seemed an eternity. The telephone rang. I remember thinking the time was around 3, 4 a.m. I looked at my watch. It was 12:05.
You a friend of Louis the Smirk?
Maybe.
Well, maybe you better go and see him at his place. Pronto.
Pensively, I stroked my 4-inch wide sideburns. Mother knew I was worried. Softly, she ran her fingers through the curly hairs on my back and shoulders. It's amazing how many women go absolutely berserk for that. And it's so easy to stick on, too. I got dressed, climbed into my paella esprit, and I screeched off into the night. When I got to Louis, the door was open. The lights were off. Something was wrong. Slowly, I reached into my waistband. Yes, I had clean underpants on. Louis? 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 Silently, I pulled the Magnum 45 from the turnip of my flares. In the darkness, two silhouettes rushed at me. I catapulted into the room, rolled over, pivoted on my hip, and fired two shots into my foot. One of the men died for me. I picked him off in midair and shot the other three before he hit the floor. There was no sound. Then...
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Otto. Happy birthday to you.
I flicked on the light.
Louis. Surprise. Surprise.
And that's how it was, Mr. Del Samba.
Asso, don't feel bad. You see, you were set up. Louis had a contract out on you. He'd shipped in two out-of-town hitmen from Gibraltar. They'd rigged your birthday cake with explosives.
The cake?
Mm-hmm.
Mrs. Smirk! Mrs. Smirk! Don't cut that cake! Don't... The blast tore me from my platform soles. In the space of 5 days, I had killed the entire Smirk family. It was still raining. I got in my car and tried to start it. But without my platform heels, my feet didn't reach the pedals. I got out and started to walk home.
Well, the remarkable thing is that it's not... We haven't ever come back. We haven't... We're back. And I think I've still got time. I'm getting a signal, actually. And I think it means I've got 2 minutes left, which should just give me enough time to say good night. No, it won't. In fact, will it? Yes, we think we can go ahead. Good night. And we've got a little more time to say good night. Thank you.
John Stupor Clark here. Shut it. Here's a poem. Shut it. If you're listening to the radio, and you must be if you can hear this, that show was sort of cliche and it starred three men called Christopher Barry, Nick Maloney, and the little one called Nick Wilton. Sorry, my rhyming scheme is all screwed up. I'll have to start again. Shut it. That flaming show was written by Rob Grant and Doug Naylor. Music was by Peter Brewis. Al Nixon was the producer. It's not that bad. Shut it. Well, that's it for another show. But the main news is, I'm absolutely thrilled. I don't know if any of you have read it in the papers, but every year they have a big award ceremony for continuity announcers. No. And where this is where the absolute cream of continuity remarks are given awards. And actually, we were fortunate enough to be associated with the Best Continuity Award after a Light Entertainment Programme Award. And I'd like to play it for you now. It was first heard on April the 11th, 1983.
A Continuity Remark, read by Leslie Forsyth, written and directed by Alison Reeder, technical production by David Fleming Williams, and produced by Martin Cambridge. It's April 1983.